This is WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
In studio with us right now, we have Brittany Urso, and she is the administrator of the Westlawn Community Hospital here in Murfreesboro, and that is along Veterans Parkway near I-840. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me again. We're excited that we've been open almost a year and a half now.
I know. I remember when you were first on, right before you guys opened, talking about hiring and everything.
Yes.
And then on, you know, shortly after that. But now that you guys have been open for, what, a full year now?
Full year, almost a year and a half. So we opened last March. So really exciting things happening. You know, we've seen almost 15,000 ER patients since we opened, which is great. So just incremental progress. We've had really, really great patient satisfaction with the community. And so just excited, the, you know, word of mouth getting out that we're here and able to serve, and just glad to be a part of, you know, St. Thomas and all the expansions that we continue to do.
So when a new hospital opens, what kind of a learning curve is it for the community? I mean, everything from, gosh, ambulance drivers to families.
Yeah, that's a great question. So we did a lot of community outreach with our EMS services. You know, one of the big questions we have from community members is, well, how do we know where to go? And the easiest answer to that is we're a fully functioning emergency department. So we can get you treated for whatever ailment that is. I can tell you the most common things that we're seeing right now is some respiratory issues, some abdominal issues, things like that. And as we get ready to go into the winter season, I'm sure, you know, we'll see an increase in COVID and flu. And so we're there, and the nice thing is that we are a department of St. Thomas Rutherford. We're only 5 miles away, so we can admit patients to Westlawn or to Rutherford.
And how often do you have to send patients, you know, back to, you know, the main campus?
Yeah, great question. So depending on what type of specialty consult you need, then we will get you transported and admitted straight to a bed at St. Thomas Rutherford. So the process has really been streamlined over since we've opened, really focusing on just that efficiency. So coming in through the ER and you get determined that you need to be admitted. If you do not need a specialty consult, like cardiac, for example, you can be admitted at Westlawn. So we literally just move you straight over to our other hallway, right into a bed, and get you started with your inpatient care. Or if you do need that specialty consult, we transport you to Rutherford, also send you straight to a bed there. So you're not going to the ER for another ER, you know, time, and you go straight to your admitted bed. So,
and I'm curious, what day, what time of hour has proven to be the busiest for y'all?
Also a great question. So typically about 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Is traditional for most ERs, and sometimes expanding into the evening hours over the weekend. But that's really kind of our peak volume time. But so that's really the other things we've been working on is how we continue to be efficient and see patients quickly, even though we've gotten busier. So I really just want to commend our physicians and our staff for their hard work and making sure we still check patients in within 5 to 10 minutes.
So. Are there some days where, you know, an hour will go by, you literally have nobody come in?
Nope. maybe occasionally at, you know, from 4 to 5 in the morning, something like that. But it was that way for the first few months. But I would say since about May of this year, we traditionally always have someone in the ED. So,
and I'm wondering, you know, what types of injuries? I know you said, you know, some of the ailments include respiratory problems and things like that. But what types of injuries have you seen there?
Sure. So 90% of our patients that we're seeing are walk-in patients, which is great. It helps us know that the community knows we're there and coming straight to us. We also, you know, encourage people to use the ambulance if they can't get to us quickly and have an emergency. But because all those patients are walking in, we're seeing a little bit of everything. We've had some stroke patients. We've had some heart attack patients, a lot of cardiac patients, And then, of course, the respiratory issues. So the other big population we're seeing that we are excited to care for is our pediatric population. So just being in the West Lawn area, we have a lot of up-and-coming, growing families in our Blackman area. And so we're averaging about 200 pediatric patients a month.
Now, being directly on I-840, do you have some people who are literally passing through Murfreesboro, then something happens, they have to go to the hospital?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we're, very glad to be in the location that we are because we're accessible from 840 and I-24 and they can get right off the interstate. We're within a mile of just jumping off 840. And so we do get a lot of people that are passing through for travel. So,
and I guess a lot of those issues may be like upper respiratory, they may be a heart attack, any of those types of things.
Yeah, absolutely. Or just, general dehydration or infections, just general GI bugs. Sometimes you just need some fluids, maybe some antibiotics, depending on what your respiratory illness is. And so we can treat and hopefully discharge you, but also admit. Typically our admissions at West Lawn, we really focus on that efficiency, and so our average length of stay, which means the amount of time that you're actually in the hospital for an admission, is about 2 days.
So if that is somebody's first stop in Murfreesboro, mm-hmm. at the hospital, first time ever passing through, I'm wondering, do they usually stay another night, maybe go to a hotel afterwards to further recover? What do you see whenever you do see patients like that?
I don't have a lot of information about that. Typically, we want to ensure before we're discharging a patient that they're ready to get back on the road and get home or have a family member with them. But of course, we could help facilitate that if they needed to stay longer. So
and there's no hotels in that exit either.
So. Not at this time. No, that is true.
Have you heard of anything else that is coming to that area?
There's a lot coming. It seems like every week we're opening new restaurants and just new local community things. We've with Publix opening, we've had a lot of influx there, and then of course our partners with Tennessee Orthopedic right next door, as well as Murfreesboro Medical Center, MMC, our physicians' offices right next door to us. We've had quite a few patients that get referred to us from them as well.
And right there in that area with all the construction going on, do you have a lot of construction injuries who come to you?
Not typically, no. We've had a couple, some squish fingers or, some arm or leg injuries, muscle strains, things like that. But we haven't seen a great, amount of injuries with that.
And West Lawn, that is the first of a concept, that neighborhood hospital concept. How has that worked out? And have you had a lot of other St. Thomas related hospitals come and just kind of see or maybe sit in for the day?
Yeah, great question. Being the first neighborhood hospital in Tennessee, I think that's really what we wanted to focus on in the beginning and continue to do, is that we are a community-based hospital. And so we want to be right there with you, close to where you can access us and get you the care that you need. And so that's part of our concept and our open concept, especially with our staff. Our staff are have a minimum of 2 years experience in healthcare, and so they're trained to help on our ER side as well as our inpatient side for any of the patients that we have.
Again, Brittany Urso with us this morning, the administrator for the West Lawn Community Hospital. Has St. Thomas talked about opening any other local neighborhood type hospitals in the area, maybe on West Tennessee or East Tennessee?
Not at this time that I know of. We really wanted to, see the success of West Lawn and how our community would utilize it and how efficient and effective we would be. And of course, Rutherford is continually growing and adding more service lines. So we're at this time just really enjoying our being able to be open to the community where we are.
What's been the biggest advantage for having a hospital of that size?
I think kind of like we talked about the staffing model, and then just really the patients feeling like they're getting that, you know, individualized care and knowing that whatever their illness is, we're going to let them know quickly and get them where they need to be.
And are you guys still hiring, or are there needs right now, positions that need to be filled?
Yeah, we are always looking for next opportunities. You know, people are always growing, whether that be graduating school or looking for a growth opportunity in their career. So we do have open positions. We have patient care techs, and we also have nursing positions, as well as radiology. We provide CAT scans and x-ray services at Westlawn, so we also have those positions. If anybody was to be interested, those positions are posted on our St. Thomas Rutherford site, since we are Department of Rutherford.
And for anybody listening, this is a full-fledged emergency room open 24/7.
That's correct, yes. Yeah.
And you serve a huge variety of needs day in and day out.
Yes, absolutely. So from, like I said, strokes, heart attacks, all the way to broken bones and lacerations that just needs a few stitches and get you on your way.
So if somebody shows up and they need some type of emergency surgery done, what's the first step in what you guys will do?
Yeah, so we obviously see our patients as quickly as possible, get them to a room, and we have board certified emergency physicians that see our patients as well. And then they determine whether they need imaging or lab work, and that can be completed on site, and then we would get them transferred immediately to St. Thomas Rutherford for surgical services if that's what they needed.
So if I don't know, stabilizing the patient in some way, then
yes,
deciding, all right, we're going to send you here,
absolutely,
or who knows,
yes,
where.
Yep. Absolutely. Yep.
And I guess some patients, they would need to be sent, what, to Nashville for more extensive procedures? Or is it typically, well, we can send you to you know, the other campus of Murfreesboro?
Typically, almost always, we can send our patients to our location in Murfreesboro, especially with the addition of our you know, cardiovascular services and surgical services at Rutherford over the last 2 years. Now, some patients, you know, may have an already established cardiologist, let's say at St. Thomas West, and prefer that, which we always want to support, you know, what the patient's request is. But definitely our closest location for emergent care for surgical services is Rutherford.
So after being open for about a year and a half, has anything surprised you yet?
I definitely think just the staff and the love that they have for a new concept. You know, it can be a little scary in the beginning for staff to work at a place that they haven't really experienced before, and how's it going to work and what resources are we going to have? But it is definitely one of the best teams that I've worked with, and they're very committed and always willing to bring new ideas to the table. We're very open to patient feedback. We know we're not perfect, although we're still doing a really great job, but always looking for ways we can improve and, you know, continue to just grow and be here for the community.
I would imagine the hospital being a little smaller, really, than most hospitals, it would allow those who work there to, you know, form a closer bond.
Absolutely, yeah. We definitely have a very family-oriented staff, and I think that's what is conveyed to the patients as well. They get to know them, and not that we want people to have to come back to the emergency room, but if they do, we're starting to see that they're bringing other family members that may need care or need to be admitted, and so really just getting to know some of our patients.
I would think staff being, you know, in a happy environment where they're enjoying, where they, you know, enjoy working with each other, they like working with the patients, that's got to do a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, just the ability of them to feel like they're being heard. And when they say, hey, this isn't really working, or, you know, what can we do better, or how can we be faster, or, you know, our wait times are getting a little bit long, how can we, you know, adjust this or work with our physicians? Just really having that open communication has been great.
You know, there's something different about, I would say, the Murfreesboro area versus a lot of other areas across the state and a lot of other hospitals across the state. The types of injuries they may see, a lot of them are quite different than what we see here in Murfreesboro. You know, you may have some inner city hospitals that see a lot of gunshot wounds. You know,
right.
We don't see a lot of that stuff here, at least nowhere near compared to the number that they see in some of the larger cities?
Yeah, absolutely. Just, you know, being, although we're growing as a community for sure, you know, we do see a different population than some of our inner cities. But if it does happen, we are capable of taking care of it. So.
And there's different, I guess, levels of care provided at each hospital. And is that what the ambulance driver, they know, all right, well, we need to send this person to XYZ hospital because this is the type of injury that they treat?
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of goes back to a little bit of our education that we've done with, of course, Rutherford County EMS and local other surrounding county services. For example, they know if the patient, you know, is having an active heart attack, then they're going to take them straight to Rutherford to take them straight to the cath lab. But then on the other side of that, if our patient walks in and is having a heart attack, we immediately call the ambulance to take them. So
it makes sense. Yeah. And again, if anybody is confused about where West Lawn is located, what's the easiest way to access it?
Yeah, so easiest way I would say is either straight down Veterans or 24 right off of 840.
Oh, easy enough. And as we start to close this morning, is there anything that really stands out to you over that first year and a half that you know, you liked being a part of more so than any other hospital or place that you've worked at before?
Yeah, I feel really blessed to be able to have all the staff in the building are, you know, report to me as a leader, but then we have the entire leader support of our St. Thomas Rutherford Hospital as well as Ascension St. Thomas as a whole, just from all of Middle Tennessee. So, you know, being a faith-based organization has really allowed our staff to be themselves and connect with our patients and just continue to live our mission and vision and, you know, serve our community. That's what most of us got into healthcare to do. And so to be able to see the positivity that's come out of opening West Lawn has been a blessing.
And the way West Lawn is laid out, is it all on the first floor? Is there room for expansion? What's on the second floor?
Yeah, so it is all on the first floor. So we do have two main entrances, but the doors are right next to each other. So there's an emergency room door as well as a main entrance door that can lead you straight to our inpatient side if you're there visiting an inpatient. But the both of those doors lead straight to registration. The one hallway is completely ER and the other hallway is completely our inpatient side. Our nurse's station and our physician station is built specifically in these neighborhood hospitals to be a very open concept, so we know what's going on in the whole building. And to answer the question about the second floor, we are looking to have physicians' offices upstairs. That's also how these neighborhood hospitals are built. We don't plan to expand our ER beds or our inpatient beds there because that kind of defeats the efficiency that we have on the layout of the model. So we're excited to see what happens over the next year with what physicians' offices may be upstairs.
And it's not like, you know, a traditional hospital where you can just walk in and wander around looking for a patient room, is it?
No, it's not. As soon as you walk in the front door, whether it be the ER side or the inpatient side, you're greeted at the registration desk with, we have a staff member there 24/7, and they will direct you and can let you know where you need to go to the inpatient side if you're looking for an inpatient, or we're alerted as soon as a patient walks in from a staff member perspective to greet you and get you checked in as into the ER.
And so do you have to like buzz them in, so to speak, if they want to go back to see a patient?
Yeah, our registration staff verify who they're there to see and confirm that patient has approved to have visitors, and then they will let the nursing staff know that they have a visitor and we'll get them right back.
And again, with us this morning, Brittany Urso, and if anybody has any questions about West Lawn, they want to learn more about it, where should they go?
Yeah, absolutely. On our St. Thomas Rutherford website, since we're a department of Rutherford, we have some information about West Lawn and the services that we provide, and always can call and speak to someone at West Lawn as well.
Sounds good. Well, Brittany, thank you for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us, and just appreciate the staff and the community for supporting us, and look forward to continue to grow.
Sounds good. Again, the time right now, 8:34. You're listening to WGNS. Stay with us. We do have more news and information coming up next.
We are broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios.
Download the MyMTE app in Google Play or in the iTunes Store and keep up with your electric usage.
The free app gives you better control of your power consumption and provides the ability to see exactly how much electricity you use.
Simply search for MyMTE today.
When is the right time to move to Adams Place?
I have enjoyed Adams Place much better than living in my house. After my wife passed away, what you're doing is you're getting people that you can interact with and have fun. Consider coming to Adams Place.
Hi, this is Terry Deal at Adams Place. Call me for more information about Adams Place. Phone 615-904-9111. Adams Place, across from Walmart.
We're excited to announce that Capstar Bank is now officially a division of Old National Bank. The friends you've made while banking right here over the years are still here, and so are those delicious, warm, homemade cookies. Everything you enjoyed about Capstar is still at Old National Bank.
In Murfreesboro at 2230 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard.
Come on over and enjoy warm cookies with friends while doing your banking at Old National Bank.
Old National Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Well, a baseball stadium in downtown Murfreesboro is one of the things that folks are talking about. Lisa Sisko with Save Canonsburg told WGNS News about a name change for their organization that is now taking place.
Now we're going to be transitioning into the Home Run History name.
And the reason for that change?
Well, we're hoping to marry history next door to the ballpark. They're proposing to build a minor league professional ballpark stadium. I'm really excited to be a part of it. I've seen some renderings and it's going to be amazing.
It was around this time last year that the Murfreesboro City Council briefly examined the idea of a baseball stadium near the downtown square. In October of 2023, an idea to build a stadium for a AA baseball franchise began to grow, with a proposed location next to Canonsburg near the intersection of South Front and Northwest Broad Street. But 1 month later, in November of last year, the idea was already fizzling out.
I would say that the initial cost, I'm just projecting, maybe $60 million. And I know the city's not going to go that route. As of right now, I'm not going to say it's not going to happen, but I'm not going to say it's going to happen.
That was City Councilman Kurt Wade last year. 1 year later, the idea has resurfaced, and organizers of the franchise still believe downtown Murfreesboro would be an ideal place to call home, especially when you combine the early history of the borough with Canonsburg Village, serving as home plate, in a sense, for a 3,500-seat baseball stadium.
The baseball stadium would be a lovely next-door neighbor and would incorporate Canonsburg as like their main entrance into a ballpark.
During a past presentation, Jason Rose, principal of Rose Plus Allen Public and Online Relations based in Scottsdale, Arizona, highlighted,
combining an athletic campus with such an important site of cultural heritage could make this one of one in the United States. I don't think it's been done before.
While discussions have not been extensive this time around, the city of Murfreesboro would likely have to pick up the tab to build a baseball stadium, or at least pay for a large percentage of the project that would ultimately be on city-owned property. But costs to not only build the stadium, but also operate the park have yet to be ironed out, and there's lots of ironing to do. As for that exact location of where America's Pastime would be played in downtown Murfreesboro, Sisko told us,
in between Hooper and Canonsburg.
Again, Hooper Supply and Canonsburg. Now, visitors would have to park a short distance away in the City Hall parking garage and use the future pedestrian bridge over Broad Street to walk to the stadium, which could be built again between Hooper Supply and Canonsburg on Front Street. A baseball stadium could also be home to downtown concerts and a variety of arts-related events if, of course, timing is correctly planned in advance of baseball season, home games, and the off-season. Furthermore, such vibrant commotion could further the city's plan to revitalize the area known as the Historic Bottoms, where the daylighting of Town Creek will soon get underway in January of 2025. Cisco said that that area has been in need of something to get things moving again.
Right now, there's very little energy. There's not much that goes on. So many people that live here don't know anything about it. It's just always just kind of been sitting there. People used to have weddings and activities. A lot of that's moved away. So we're just hoping to revitalize that.
Again, the idea of a downtown baseball stadium in Murfreesboro remains a fluid concept with no firm plans solidified at this point. Organizers like Jason Rose and also Lisa Cisco with Home Run History plan to see a more comprehensive proposal in the very near future, perhaps a plan that will address the needs and the interest of the community that include detailed architectural renderings of what the stadium could look like next to Cannonsburg. That said, we'll talk more in depth with Lisa Cisco this coming Monday. WGNS will keep you informed on the idea of a downtown Murfreesboro baseball stadium. And speaking of downtown Murfreesboro, that same area, Town Creek, again, it's been approved to get underway, the daylighting of it, January 2025. And during that whole process, as they commence construction, a portion of Hickerson Drive will be shut down and not accessible to vehicular traffic. That's coming up spring of 2025, just north of West Castle Street, again in that same area. The Planning Commission voted to approve the mandatory referral request September 4th of 2024, and the closure of that segment of Hickerson Drive will all help to facilitate the construction of that Town Creek daylighting project. Again, the daylighting of Town Creek, that's about to get underway in downtown Murfreesboro. You can see a video of Town Creek and how that's going to be on our website, WGNSradio.com. A big event coming up this weekend, it'll be on Sunday the 22nd in Smyrna, the Walk for Water event.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
We're talking with Pastor Aaron Tremblay about a special event coming up called Walk for Water. And Aaron, this is an event you guys have done before in Smyrna. Tell us more about it.
So this is going to be our third annual Middle Tennessee Walk for Water. We have had really great success in the last couple of years. The organization has had almost 600 walks in its history since 2007. But starting with our first walk in 2022, Middle Tennessee, right here in Smyrna, has had the largest walk by a significant margin and continued to have success over the last couple of years.
Now, when people hear about there's a need for water, those who live in the U.S. probably don't even realize there is a need for water elsewhere, but tell us more about that.
So according to the World Health Organization, about 829,000 people a year die from polluted water-related illnesses and diseases around the world, and about 159 million people worldwide drink directly from surface water sources, which can be contaminated by animals and all sorts of different things. And so it really is a rampant problem around the world.
Some of the countries that will ultimately be helped out by this Walk for Water, they're areas where folks are washing their clothes in the same water they're bathing in. It's the same water that's polluted by different companies in that country where they're dumping who knows what kind of toxins into the water supply. But these are the things that people face every day.
That's right. And the water sources are shared, as you mentioned, for all those different purposes. And unfortunately, there's not a great deal of awareness about the issues that can come from misusing those surface sources of water.
Some of the third world areas that will be needing and ultimately hopefully benefiting from this, the families, they have to walk a certain amount of miles in order to get their water each day or each afternoon. And sometimes it's the mother doing the walking. Sometimes it's the kids with mom. Go into detail about that.
So the reason that we call it Walk for Water is because the average distance a person has to travel for access to water in developing countries is about 3.7 miles. So we just round that up to four. And the amount of water a typical family will carry back and forth from that source for all their needs for the day is about 5 gallons, which when you do the math on that adds up to about 40 pounds of water that they have to transport at least a mile and a half on the way back. And that's quite a load to carry. And we know that the people, in addition to mothers, as you mentioned, doing it, sometimes children have to carry that burden. And in order for them to do that, they have to miss opportunities for things like schooling and those type of things, because without water, the family can't survive. And so that takes priority over some of those other needs.
It's kind of hard to imagine. So a mom with maybe a newborn child basically has to carry 5 gallons, 3.7 miles. That's a lot to do, especially when it's hot outside.
That's right. And these countries that we're talking about, so our Walk for Water specifically here in Middle Tennessee, in the last two walks we've had, we've raised enough money to build 14 wells across 6 countries in Africa. And so some of those countries that have been directly impacted by our family here in Middle Tennessee has been Uganda, Zimbabwe, Malawi, Ghana, and Nigeria, several countries that have been impacted. And the way that they calculate that impact is they figure that each well impacts approximately 2,000 people in that local community, that they now have direct access to clean, good water. And so they regain that time that they would have to spend, that physical expense of energy, and they regain all of that back. And the water that they're actually using and drinking is healthy. It's good water. It's good for the children. Statistically, that number I mentioned earlier, according to the World Health Organization, that 829,000, the vast majority of that is children under 5 that die from things like diarrhea and other things that are caused by the pollutants in the water.
Again, we're talking with Pastor Aaron Tremblay about a special event called Walk for Water coming up in Smyrna. And the date of this event is September 22nd. What day is that on?
That is a Sunday afternoon, and it will start at 3 o'clock. Pre-registration will be at 2. And one really exciting thing this year is we're moving locations. We have been doing it on the sidewalks of Smyrna, but this year we'll be at Sharp Springs Park. And you want to use the SB Drive address if you're familiar with Jefferson Pike. There's a little bit of construction going on over there right now. And so 1000 SB Drive is the location at Sharp Springs Park. It's going to be a phenomenal opportunity this year. We're going to add a lot of things. We'll have a lot of activities for kids, bouncy houses, face painting, and balloons, and those kind of things. But also a lot of learning opportunities, hands-on type things for them to experience the pumps that are actually built to draw the water up the wells and those kinds of things. And then we're also going to have, again this year, this will be our second time having other local nonprofits from here in Middle Tennessee that have an opportunity for free to just set up a table and booth and share all the great things that people are doing to serve their neighbor right here in Middle Tennessee.
Do you have folks who have gone to these other countries who participate in the walk?
Yes. So we do have several people that work for, so Walk for Water is a part of an organization called Healing Hands International that's based out of Nashville. And some of their organizers and some of the people that are directly involved with the well construction will be at the walk this year.
And again, the walk, September 22nd in Smyrna. And what's going to take place before, during, after the walk? What all's planned for that day?
So before the walk, when you arrive to register, we have some really exciting things this year about our event. Every single participant that comes out, registration is free, and everyone that comes out gets a free t-shirt. Everyone that comes out will get a hot dog, a bag of chips, and a drink, because we want to make sure everybody's well fed and well hydrated for the walk. And then in addition to that, we have a sponsor this year that will donate for every participant we have. So no matter how old or young, no matter what economic strata they come from, that donor is going to make a donation for every single participant. So just by showing up, you get a free t-shirt, a free meal, and a donation. A tangible contribution will go towards the construction of the wells. So this is a great time to get the whole family out. Grandma, grandpa, all the way down to the newborn in the stroller. We've seen them in wheelchairs and being pulled behind in wagons, all sorts of things. It's a great opportunity to get the family out. Fresh air, a good cause, and something I think everybody can unify and rally behind.
So going back to that average family in some of these developing countries where they're having to walk to and from a well or a water source, roughly 4 miles, and they're carrying about 5 gallons worth of water. Do you have anybody who carries 5 gallons of water on this walk just to get an idea of what it feels like?
Yeah. So we have what we call jerry cans that are there that can hold up to 5 gallons, and we fill them with an assorted amount of water. So people can have an opportunity to feel just what that's like to carry 1 gallon all the way up to 5 gallons of water over the course of that 4 miles. And it is a great experience for people to be able to understand what's going on. And I'll tell you, myself, having participated in several walks now, I don't carry that 4 gallons for the 4 miles.
It's a lot. I mean, it doesn't sound like it would be much just if you're sitting there thinking, yeah, well, you know, I carry that out of the grocery store. But it's a lot more than that. You know, I don't know how much a 24-pack of water is at the grocery store, but it's probably about at least 2 gallons, I would mm-hmm. say. So you could imagine carrying 2 24-packs of water.
It's a lot. And again, people are having to do this every day just to live. And the average person here in the United States goes through about 9 to 15 gallons of water in a day pretty easily. And most of us that take showers in the morning and those kind of, we may expend 5 gallons of water before we even leave the house between brushing our teeth, cooking something for breakfast, and taking a shower. And so just imagine if 5 gallons, that's all you have. You're limited by what physically you can carry for 2 miles. And that 5 gallons has to stretch across your entire family for all the needs that you have for the day.
You know, in these countries, they don't have, these families, they don't have the luxury of taking a morning shower or afternoon shower after they've been working all day. They just don't have homes that have running water supplies usually. So it's something that I think we take for granted each and every day. You know, after these folks work a long day and their days are long, they will go rinse off in a nearby stream that we know is polluted.
If they're even fortunate enough to be close enough to a stream to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And it may be that all the water that they had brought in the morning has all been utilized, and so they don't even have an opportunity to have the comfort of some cool water at the end of a hot day working outside all day long.
You know, I'm sure taking a shower, taking a bath, that's probably the last thing on their list. It's probably more so they're thinking about, well, we need enough water to drink, to rehydrate. We need enough water to cook, you know, whatever it is we're cooking for dinner tonight.
Just by having some people here in Middle Tennessee come together and walk in the last 2 years, we've impacted somewhere between 14 and 20,000 people who now have had that experience change for them. That clean water is just a pump away now, where it used to be that walk, where they didn't have an opportunity maybe to have water to brush their teeth or for hygiene and those kind of things, but now it's easily accessible to them every day. And think about the impact that us coming together as a community here is having on them, not just right now, but generationally. Those children now that are being raised with ready access to clean water, the opportunities they have with school, the ease perhaps that now they can pay attention. Imagine how hard it would be going to school and maybe having a small sip of water for the entire day. I mean, that would be cumbersome as you're trying to excel and move ahead. And so this effort that we're making right here in Middle Tennessee, just going out, bringing our family, having a great day together, but also raising this money has impacted thousands of people already. And we look forward this year to impacting thousands more.
Again, the 3rd annual Middle Tennessee Walk for Water, it will be held in Smyrna, September 22nd, which is a Sunday. And to register, you can go to MTW, that's Middle Tennessee Walk, and then number 4W Water. So MTW4W.com. You can register there, or you can just sign up on the day of the event, right?
Yes, sir. Okay. Yeah, and we'll have a lot of opportunity. We have a great volunteer team that will be there helping people to get registered, passing out the t-shirts for all the participants, and showing people around.
And the goal is to raise as much money as you can, and that money will be used to dig and put in a well system in different communities, you know, in third world or developing countries, in Africa and places like that. And each well, it benefits, you said, about 2,000 people who live within a couple of miles of that well.
That's correct. And I would say immediate proximity of that well. And so, and there are people who would travel now. So if, let's say, they used to go to a surface water source before that was polluted, once this well is there, word gets out. And now even people who still have to walk a distance to get to water, at least the water that they're getting is clean, good water that's not going to give their children or their families diseases and those kinds of things. So it impacts even more than that, but directly in that immediate area, probably about 2,000 people each one is impacting.
Again, Aaron Tremblay with us, and once more, the event, September 22nd in Smyrna. Learn more at mtw4w.com. Well, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Scott.